Dick really enjoyed. If I came to him and I said, look, I could do an hour of science talk of discoveries in science, or I could do 10 puzzles, I am willing to bet almost anything he would jump at the 10 puzzles. So what you were doing is supplying him with one half of a puzzle, which would probably frustrate the heck out of him. So I could sort of understand how he felt that way. And, well, I mean, you're the guy, I think, who recommended that the ARRL give Dick a technical award for the technical net. Isn't that so?
Yeah, that's right. When I read about it, one of the magazines, I guess AR or whatever, and they were looking for somebody to give that award to. I said, my God, how could Dick and I have not gotten that award? I called them, and he hadn't gotten it. So I just sent in the letter, and sure enough, they gave it to him. And then I had to go to New Jersey and present it. And I'm not very good with public speaking, but it went off very well, and he was delighted. And it was a pleasant afternoon.
Very good. Matter of fact, on the club website, the memorial page has a cropped picture of Dick, and it's at the occasion where the ARRL execs are handing him the plaque.
Yeah, I hadn't seen that. A couple of the photos.
The time is 12:04 a.m. 73. And good night from the W2VL repeater. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73. And good night from the W2VL repeater.
Let's see if we're back on. Nope.
This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 12:04 a.m.
Let's see if we're back on. Apparently we are. Very good. So, Alan, I'm sorry that it cut you off towards the end. It was resetting.
No, I was just saying that I had gotten two photographs of him that I was very glad to have gotten that showed two sides of him. One, this very joyous side of him while he was relating stories and talking about, you know, what we all love to talk about. And the other one, he was coming out of, I think it was HRU, and you could see that he just was just digesting the information he had, and just you could tell he had a pleasant time, and I just caught that picture perfectly. As he was walking out, you could see those two on his memorial page.
Okay, very good. I mean, the most unusual picture I saw, because I was looking for any kind of images on the Internet, I wrote that little obituary in the newsletter, there was this wonderful picture of him. It looked like he was around 40 years old, and he was wearing a cowboy hat. And he looked like he was having fun, whatever he was doing.
That had to be a ham fest. You always wear a cowboy hat at ham fest.
Okay, so that makes sense because he had a big smile on his face and he looked like he was having fun. And I'm sure a ham fest would give him fun, although in the last few years, you know, when we kept on trying to cajole him to come to one of the ham fests so that we could actually meet him, he would just tell us that he had enough of that stuff. He didn't need to buy anymore.
Why would he wear a cowboy hat?
I think it was to have fun and to keep the sun off of his head. That's pretty much it. For some reason, when it came to Hamfest, that's the only time I know that he would actually wear a cowboy hat. Any other time he wanted to keep the sun off of his head, he would wear a baseball cap of some type.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a story there, too. Yeah, well, I miss him. I always saw him as the touchstone of ham radio. I would bounce in and out of it, and I always did enjoy knowing that Sunday nights, I could turn on the radio and just listen, even if I wasn't tuned in on what was going on. The way he spoke, he was such a nice man, and so genuine that just listening to his tone of voice was pleasing to me, almost like coming home, no matter where I was. So it's a loss.
Yes, indeed. He had a folksy quality that was, you know, friendly. You know, I mean, there were some people, I think someone mentioned it earlier, who for some reason felt intimidated. I don't think it's anything that Dick ever said or any tone he had. I think that was just in the eye of the beholder. But he had a folksy, charming sensibility, and the way he described things was easy, and it went down easy, and it was very useful. You know, some guys flash, try to blind you with science, with these heavy-duty words that might mean something, might not mean something, but they certainly don't get any idea across. And Dick was the exact opposite of that. You know, if he could find a simple way to describe a principle, he would enjoy doing that for people.
Yeah, I agree. He had a way of painting a conceptual picture in your mind that so that you could understand and then remember what he was talking about. And it's funny, you were all talking about how he was working on the oil heater and his water heater and all that. I actually was listening to those conversations a few times and picked a few things up so that when my father had a problem with his oil heater, I thought I knew what the problem was, and I went and dealt with it, and sure enough, what he had been talking about was what the problem was. I fixed it. My father thought I was a genius, and I had to hand that to Dick.
Okay, very good. There was a lot of non-amateur radio practical information. Before I was listening, there was apparently a lot of talk about generators because there had been power outages in Long Island. And so I understand that Dick got together with some other people and arranged a large sale with some discounts of generators and invited people to come on the technical net to discuss the difference between different technologies and generators. So, you know, all those things came in useful to people. You know, knowledge is never meaningless. It always has value to someone. So, you know, that was one of the things that people didn't always think about when they thought about the technical net. They thought of antennas. But there were a lot of other things other than antennas being discussed.
Hey, Chris, did Dick run a generator at the house?
Yeah, he had purchased a particular generator that he had studied for a long period of time. Which took three different kinds. It could take three different kinds of gas. I think it could take propane and diesel and gasoline, I think. But eventually, after running that generator and leaving the fuel in it, the carburetor clogged, and it requires a certain kind of disassembly in order to clean the clog. And he had a habit of leaving the fuel in the device and then needing to clean that carburetor, taking it apart, but then not reassembling it. So right now, actually, that generator is in the backyard underneath a container, still disassembled, and I'm going to have to try to figure out how to reassemble it. We have several generators that I've found in the shed that I didn't even know we had. I know we have one in the basement that hasn't been running in years. I'll have to check that one out, and so on. So some of this was study, and some of it was habit. KP2IQN.
You know, again, Dick, you know, what Dick did touched my life. It was after the Hurricane Sandy, I decided to get a generator. And he was the one who had said a lot of people had generators, but because they hadn't maintained them and run them regularly, the generators didn't work when they needed them. So when I had a generator ultimately put into my house after the Hurricane Sandy, I had the generator, you know, running once a week, of course, automatically, but I would have people come once a month to make sure that the oil was changed and everything was done right. And I did that because Dick had mentioned that that was a good idea to do. And sure enough, it came in handy. I did have a neighbor who had a generator, but of course it didn't work when he needed it. But I had followed this maintenance schedule, and it's available to this day when I need it. And that was, again, because of some advice Dick had given out.
Very good. Knowledge is always useful, as I said before. I wonder if, because some, as Chris mentioned, they take different fuels, some of them. If you installed a propane only, I can't see it would require as much maintenance as a liquid fuel like gasoline or diesel. So I would assume there's less maintenance for a propane-operated generator.
I'm assuming that's true except for changing the oil. And I think it still requires a spark plug. So those two things pretty much, I mean, maybe less, but it wouldn't clog the carburetor anymore.
Yeah, I'm thinking it probably, I mean, everything needs to be checked on every so often, but, you know, you could probably get a long, much longer length of time between maintenance checks. One of the things that always fascinates me about really badly written science fiction is that a lot of them have these premises where very technologically advanced fighter jets are kept stored someplace for 1,000 years of neglect. And immediately the characters run into them, turn the switches on, and fly into the air. you can imagine what would happen if you try and turn on a fighter bomber that has been sitting around in not sheltered terribly well for 1,000 years. It would probably just crumble into dust. Yeah, Paul?
Yeah, one piece of advice he gave with the generators before was don't get one that's too big and don't get one that's too small. Too small, you know, it's not going to power enough stuff in your house. Just figure out what you're going to need, but don't, you know, buy one that's twice the size of something that you're going to need, because, you know, you're going to find yourself going down to the gas station, you know, with a long power outage, constantly buying gas. The bigger ones are going to use up a lot more gas. So I thought about it. I figured out roughly what I needed. I wound up with a four kilowatt. And, you know, it's just right, you know. I run cables through the house and all, but, you know, there's different ways of doing it. You could have it permanently hooked up to your house. He gave all the choices, all the options, you know, and I took that option. And it's worked out. Back to you, Ross.
Okay, yeah, I remember some of those technical nets, and there were people discussing transfer switches and safety aspects of running a generator without fully killing the power through the utility box. I don't know. I remember QSD every so often will run an article about guys who want to, have all these power shortage, emergency gizmos up. And one guy, they did an article on where he basically filled his two-car garage with lead acid cells and had a generator. And he was ready for, you know, if the power went out for a long time, apparently. And someone kind of asked him how much it cost to just maintain and build something like that. And couldn't you spend the power outage time in a fancy hotel instead? And he just said it wouldn't have been fun that way, I guess. So I don't know. Thankfully, Brooklyn has not had that many outages. We are connected for some odd reason to the Staten Island power grid. So I think we've had two power outages since the 50s. So that's pretty good.
That's very good, Roy. We've had many power outages. not only hurricanes, you know, a little breeze goes by sometimes. What happens? You know? So it's good to have one out here. You know, you don't need to power everything in your house, in my opinion. You know, I figure the refrigerator, some lights, fans, maybe an air conditioner if you need it. You know, and of course, ham radio. You got to power that. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, you always have to allow for ham radio. I mean, I don't have a generator, but I do have a lithium iron phosphate battery that's hooked up to this very radio, because I don't know if anyone recalls or cares. A couple years ago, I was having some weird problems with the repeater. I was having these just falling out of the repeater, my audio signal. And we tried all kinds of different things. And finally, I used a separate radio with a separate antenna, with a separate power supply, with a separate microphone, and I still fell out of the repeater. So I have this battery here in case something terrible happens. But that's a stopgap for maybe, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours if I transmit. If I just receive, it'll obviously last a lot longer. But it's always good to have power for your gear.
Yeah, by the way, that the guy is right, the one you were talking about with all the lead-acid batteries in his garage. It is more fun to stay home and have your house lit up. When we lost power this winter, not this winter, but last winter, my whole block had to bug out because, you know, all of their heating systems required electricity to move the hot water around. But my house is lit up. I have an overpowered generator. I can light the entire house up and use everything as a transfer switch, if it's done right. It's natural gas powered, so we don't have to run down to the gas station to fill it up. And, you know, I can see my neighbors just stopping in front of the house thinking, how's he got power? That was a lot of fun. And I didn't have to leave. I was watching my big screen TV while the power was out in the whole block, and it was a lot of fun. But, of course, my neighbors still haven't gotten their own. But one did ask me to send an extension cord over the fence if I would do that for them.
So you basically live the fable of the ant and the grasshopper, eh?
Oh, yeah, Roy. I'm prepared. I enjoy that very much.
Okay, very good. It's always good to be prepared when disaster hits. If disaster never hits, then, you know, then it's an exercise only. But good for you. You know, I wish I had belt and suspenders, too. But thankfully, so far, so good in Brooklyn. We'll see what happens as the future rolls on. We live in curious times.
Yeah, I think we always do. It's only when we look back we say that those times were stable. That's never stable. So always treat it like it's not stable. But I'm glad I caught this Q show. I didn't know that there was a memorial to Dick going on, but something told me to grab my walkie-talkie and just throw it in the car and turn it on. And I was headed home and I heard it, and I was glad to hear it was going on and caught it.
Well, I'm glad you heard it. I'm glad you're participating. As I said before, you're part of the story as well. You helped to get Dick the Technical Excellence Award that he deserved, and we're all thankful for you for that. And, I advertised it on the Technical Net. I believe Richie mentioned it more than a few times on the InfoNet. I don't know if it was on the website. I don't recall seeing it, but it might have been. It was in the newsletter. So, I wish I could get the message out to more people, but I tried the best I could.
Oh, it's nothing you did or didn't do. It's just I go in and out of ham radio. Depends on the time of year, I suppose. And I don't even have a radio in my car anymore, but something told me. This is the first time, by the way, I took the walkie-talkie into the car just to keep it in the car and flick it on, the first time. And then I heard this. I was like, whoa. and I was already headed home, so I can get back. You guys would never hear me from the car, but I had this two-meter at home. Figured I would jump in, so I'm glad I caught. But if anybody else wants to, share some memories with Dick, I enjoy listening to them very much.
Well, very good, Alan. Like I said before, Richie was kind enough to reset the repeater. Usually the repeater is going to take a dirt nap from 12:04 to, I guess, 6 o'clock in the morning. I don't really listen to a repeater at 6 o'clock when it wakes up. So that we have an opportunity to use the repeater or not use the repeater, and it depends upon how people feel. And I'm sure there's enough stories to get us into, dawn. It's just whether people can stay awake and participate and share stories. So once again, I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Limewalk Radio Wake in Memory of a great amateur radio operator, Dick K2RIW, who passed away April 26th. And we're just reminiscing of all the good stories that we have of interacting with Dick, listening to him on the technical net, talking to him on the repeaters, and a few fortunate people talking to him in person. So if anyone would like to add any stories to the list, please give us your first name and your call sign.
N2HUH.
Yes, Andrew. Glad to have you aboard.
All righty, all right. Very good. And good evening. And it's now good morning, I'm sure. But, hello. Hello, Chris. And good to hear you on. And my buddy, Dr. Allen, who I haven't spoken to in a long time. How are you, Allen?
It has been a long time. All is well here. All is well. How about your side?
I'm doing quite well. Very well if it just involves me, and if it involves other people, still rather well, but a little bit more effort. And I was driving home from the salt mine, and I heard most of that. And I did want to say that when I first met Dick, he actually did. He was wearing the cowboy hat, and at first I didn't think it was him, but I heard his voice and I knew it was him. So as always, the voice gives it away, and I had a conversation with him in person, which was good. Enjoyed that. I do remember that like it happened yesterday. And that was one of the things that stuck out in my mind. I think I only saw him one other time at Hamfest. I don't know if there's a story behind him not going to Hamfest, or we just didn't cross paths, but I only saw him twice at a Hamfest, which I used to go to regularly.
Okay, Andy, very good. Any other memories? You must have had a couple of chats with him on the repeaters.
Well, yeah, going back to late 80s when I first got into radio, I had an awful time with HF interference, and of course I was younger and I used to like doing other things, but the tech net was very capturing because of a Dick. And I would not to go hang out at the social scene or the bar or wherever it may be, just to listen to the net and participate. But I also wanted to ask a question, which I did. I always had a question about interference that Dick was trying to help me solve for many weeks. What, there was a funny part to that story. Let me let it drop. Dick had made a couple of comments. One was, how am I always the first I always seemed to be the first one to get on the net. Back then it was called the Hip and Dick Show. That was Hippocrates. I think his name was, I forgot his call sign or it was changed, but, and he had, I think I had made him laugh also when he had said that I had always gotten into the net first, it seemed, and he was making making a joke about that. I don't remember exactly what it was, but when I finally, eventually, I confessed to him, and I told him, well, I'm having a lot of trouble with HF, but I do Oscar 13 satellite, and I just point the beam at in that direction, and I turn on my amplifier, and I just wanted to always be the first one to ask my question and get it out of the way. I couldn't, like anxious. I was just anxious, so I kind of cheated and used a lot of power just to get in there. So I guess I was overriding a lot of stations just for the opportunity to talk to Dick. So I would otherwise I would not do that. So it still brings a smile to my face right now as I'm telling the story.
Yeah, Andy, I mean, there are still people who kind of try and get the first slot of TechNet a couple of months ago. You know, people who kind of sidle up a quarter to eight and yell out to see if Dick was listening and, you know, to put their call sign in the slot, as it were. So, you know, it shows that there are people interested and have questions that need answering. So, that's something that Dick loved. I would recall regularly if Dick re-met someone on a repeater that he hadn't chatted with for 10, 15 years, inevitably at one time or another he would say, you know, they should check out the TechNet and, you know, ask a question, participate. He was always looking for more people to come to the TechNet and make it even bigger than it was. So I'm sure he appreciated your questions and that you were eager about it.
Well, I think he might have recognized some of my tenacity and all for my frustration that I couldn't enjoy the hobby. And I might have relayed a couple of stories about made it sound like a joke, but I had an elderly lady who didn't want to disturb, but she actually said she heard me coming out of a microwave oven. So, and so on and so forth. So it was getting rough. So I guess he put that extra effort in and did the best we could. But anyway, so I actually enjoyed the many years of the TechNet from the late 80s and to the 90s and then recently, of course. I always felt that he put an extra effort in to help my situation, the different situations that I've had. And he had a lot of patience with men of his knowledge. To have that kind of patience also. And that was a good balance. I don't think I have that. And I don't have the knowledge or the patience. But he did. He had them both. And what just came to my mind is I think most men seek wealth and prestige and honor. And I would have to say that in my mind, Dick always had honor and he had it, he earned it, and he just, you know, to a very high degree. So he achieved that, and I guess the reason why we're doing this is a proof of that, that he always had honor.
Yes, indeed. He was a seeker for wisdom, but he did it in an honorable manner and a kind manner. Was more than happy to share whatever he had learned along the way.
Yes, and he's also complimented me too, I remember, which meant a lot to whether it was my a different creative way of tuning up an antenna, or fooling the tuner, or doing certain things to actually get it to do what I wanted, and different subjects, whether it was telescopes or metal detecting or some of the hobbies that I had, he would actually stop and we would have conversations about that for quite a long time. I took that as a compliment because, but for some reason, I don't think anybody else really cared. And he did. So he definitely, like me, I am a seeker of knowledge, but somewhat not very important knowledge sometimes, but yes, so I am like that myself, but not to his degree, obviously. I mean, sometimes those physics discussions were, I was trying my best. If I was eating or drinking, I'd have to stop or the ball game would be over. I would totally lose it. it was amazing. He was definitely amazing. Can't say enough words about that. Anyway, let me let it drop.
Andy, he could see very far. And I always felt that even though I couldn't see nearly as far as he could, I felt that because I knew him, that I could, you know, in a sense, see as far through him. And most people who know what he knows isn't going to allow you to see through him, if you know what I mean. I felt privileged to know somebody who had that kind of superpower and didn't mind coming down to someone much, much less knowledgeable and sharing it.
Yeah, you're right. He, if he really didn't understand it fully, the concept, he would actually stick with you. And if not, even if you may not get it, to invite you to try again next week. So, yeah, he would actually have that patience. But I guess he didn't want to keep it too long because it was other people in the queue that had a question. But he would stick with you quite a long time. Yeah, he's definitely a rare breed and very far and few in between. I never met anybody like him. And that's going to hold true. Is it true that some kind of joke? Was it true that with Back to the Future, the movie Back to the Future, that that somebody actually took a line, one of his lines, whether it was a saying that he had or a nomenclature for something that was used in a movie, or is that not true?
I never heard of that.
Neither have I. That would be interesting. I don't know how that would quite work, but I never heard that one before.
I'm not aware of that either. KB2IQN.
Okay, Chris. Maybe I'm not sure if somebody was putting me on or I misunderstood something, but I thought one of them was the was influx capacitors, and I thought the other one was the if you're going to go Back to the Future, dressed apart or something like that. I thought that was things that Dick might have said, but just thought I'd ask. If I didn't ask me now, I would never remember to ask again.
I'm not aware of that, but I will tell you a story that will make you laugh, that's sort of, you know, it's realistic, but you'll see. With the antenna my father used to actually listen to the Apollo astronauts, that he actually wrote an article about how to create in a I think it was QSD or something. He got phone calls about that antenna because people watching the TV show UFO wanted to help catch the aliens because in the TV show they were having trouble getting the aliens, and people at home wanted to build this antenna and would call my father up on the phone trying to figure out, like, if this was a good antenna for that purpose. KBTYQN.
All right, okay. So that's why I asked the question, because I figured you would know. You would know. So that makes sense. No, I just thought somebody had mentioned that to me, and I can't remember who, about the somebody was listening to the TechNet, because they were listening to something, you know, conversation they've never heard before, and they might have picked up a couple of things, and they were related to the movie industry, employed in the movie industry somehow in some capacity. All righty-o. And I guess if anything else comes to mind, I'll be glad to talk about it, but I wasn't really prepared. Like I said, I was working today, and I was quite busy for some reason today, so I'm glad I came home in time. Actually, tomorrow I have to do a little bit more work on my truck, something, as always, that's why I always listen and respect to Dick, because he knows so many things about so many different subjects, and I'm fixing everything. You name it, I fix it, and except my roof. So I'll be listening. I'll be standing by. So far, so good.
Okay, thanks, Sandy. I appreciate your participation. You know, no one has to prepare their homework. It's just from the heart. That's, I think, most people just are working on that level tonight and this morning. And I think that's a fine tribute to a man. So once again, this is AC2GS, and this is the Limark Radio Wake in memory of a great amateur radio operator, Dick K2RIW, passed away April 26th of this year. And if you have any other stories or comments that you want to share with all of us, please feel free. Just hit the push-to-talk button, give us your call sign, and your first name. Okay, once again, this is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Radio Wake in memory of Dick K2RIW, a gentleman who was the host of the Limark Technical Net and other technical nets for 38 years, wrote articles, wrote patents, and made this hobby a more enjoyable thing for many, many, many people, some of which are listening and speaking tonight, this morning. Anyway, if anyone would like to share any further stories, comments, what have you, just hit the push-to-talk button, give us your call sign, and your first name.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
D. And you did a great job. Great job. I don't know how much longer you're going to be here, but today's another day. So, you know, tomorrow there's going to be a launch at 3:22 of two astronauts leaving American soil from Florida, going up to the space station. First time since the Atlantis space shuttle in 2011. And I know K2RIW would have had 10,000 questions regarding this topic, about safety and what are they going to do, and suppose this happens and suppose that happens.
compare this to all the other different flights, manned flights, and it would have been something. But so such as it is, all we have is memories. I'm going to turn it back to you, Roy, AC2GS. This is WS2N.
Okay, very good, Paul. Yes, I miss all those well-thought-out questions that Dick asked you during the space report to kind of extend and expand and you know, fill out his knowledge of the subject, which was vast to begin with. And he would like to know how all these things turn out, and unfortunately he won't be able to. But as I said before, we'll keep going on. TechNet will be this Sunday at 8 p.m. as it always has been, and I'll be there, and you'll be there, and I hope everyone listening out there will put aside a little time and come by, and if they're interested, participate, because even Dick needed people participating in the technical net. He could do great monologues, but I don't think that was the point of the exercise. I think the point of his exercise was a kind of bilateral give and take. So keep that in mind, and if you have nothing better to do Sunday nights at 8 p.m., consider the technical net, and please consider participating and make it a more interesting experience. But I digress. I am AC2GS. This is the Limark Wake Radio Wake for Dick, K2RIW. And once again, I'll ask if anyone has any stories or comments that they would like to share with us tonight.
And again, this is Paul, WS2N. I just want to say to Chris and to Chris's mother, condolences, and he's a great guy. So that's it. I know I heard Chris still transmitting before. Back to you, Roy.
Yes, indeed. Well, thank you, Paul. I'm sure Chris has heard what you had to say. This is AC2GS, and once again, if anyone has any thoughts and stories and comments to be made, please give us your first name and your call sign.
Roy, you just doubled for a second with Chris, so he just came back. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, I'm sorry, Chris. Please say what you said again, please.
Oh, no worry, Roy. Sorry about that. I just wanted to let Paul know that my mother is listening as well, and thank you for your comment. KB2IQN.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Chris. Once again, anyone out there have any stories or comments or statements they'd like to make, reflections and remembrances of a well done life. We go through this journey, I think, once. Some people might not think that. The destination's kind of set. So it's sort of the journey getting there that counts as far as I'm concerned. And I think Dick made a great journey of it all and shared it with so many other people. So if anyone wants to, again, comment or offer any remembrances that they have, please give us your first name and your call sign.
This is Dave, M2ATG. Again.
Yes, Dave.
It's nice to hear Chris on the net tonight. And his mom, and we certainly want to pass along our sympathies and condolences to them. And we all know how learned Dick was, and he would entertain all our questions on the TechNet. And it was always a situation where you would want to ask Dick a question, and maybe maybe for once have an upper hand, and maybe you knew something that, that Dick didn't know about yet. Maybe it was a topic that you saw on the news or read in a magazine or heard on the radio. And I think in all the years, it was only a couple of times that, that Dick didn't know the answer to the questions, but every now and then I would try to sneak one over on him. You know, I would see something on the news and I would ask Dick. And, you know, in my mind, this would be something that Dick wouldn't have known about yet because it just came out or, you know, some new topic or something like that. And I would ask Dick about the particular subject matter. And Dick would come back and, you know, you would think for a couple of minutes, you would think that actually you had put one over on Dick that he didn't know, you know, that what you were talking about. And then he would turn the tables on you because not only didn't he knew about the topic, the subject matter, but he knew everything about the topic and the subject matter because he had read about it somewhere. And it was amazing, you know, the information that he had stored up in his head. He must have been a voracious reader, you know, magazines and things like that, because, yeah, it was tough to get one over on Dick. Back to that at 2APG.
Yes, indeed, Dave. I don't know all of the things that Dick read, but I know he kept up with the issues of Scientific American when it was delivered. Probably the next day, he had consumed the entire magazine. He read the IEEE magazine as well, and I'm sure a lot of other newspapers and magazines and books. I unfortunately, it's nice if you could kind of learn this by osmosis, but unfortunately, the density of knowledge kind of requires something along the lines of reading to kind of get the most information in the shortest possible time. So certainly Dick had a lot of practical experience and a lot of keen insight into problem solving, but I'm sure he was up to speed with reading a lot of things.
KC2 RFM.
Yes, Alan.
I have a question for Chris. Go ahead. You know, it just occurred to me that I'm wondering now if going or watching a movie with Dick would sometimes get spoiled because of his, you know, that when somebody knows something really deep, he can't let it go and let the fantasy wash over him. So I remember we were talking, I remember specifically this conversation with Paul a few years ago when The Martian came out, and he was just blowing out of the water one after one how things that we saw in the movie couldn't possibly happen. And I wonder if he spoiled movies for you and your mom.
When I was younger, it was a common experience if we would go to a movie together and he'd see something in the movie that couldn't possibly be, like, you know, because he knew the way space worked. Like, you know, you'd see something like someone yell in space and then somehow it would get carried or something along those lines. And he would say, you know, BS under his breath, like, you know, next to me. After a while, later on, when it was clear that we understood as a family that the things that would happen in movies are not necessarily real, we would just sort of like have a debunking session right after the movie, and he'd list off things that couldn't possibly be. So, like, on the drive home is the way, you know, the debunking session, or when we would go from the movie to, like, going out to eat or something, that's the time in which we would go over all of the things that couldn't possibly be. And because it was important from his point of view to make sure that we actually understood the way science really worked rather than the way the movie portrayed it. And likewise, after a while, I actually wanted to get it off my chest as well. It's like, you know, a little bit of frustration at the way, like, things are portrayed versus the way things really work. So after a while, it was sort of a mutual thing. KB2IQN.
Oh, that's good. That's exactly the way it should go down. is taking the unreal and then teaching why it's unreal. I remember asking him in the movie The Martian, where Matt Damon's character gets speared with a broken antenna, of all things, and the blood clotted around it and supposedly saved his life. And I had asked Dick, any chance that could possibly happen? His answer was just very simple. I'll have to find the audio recording. It's just a dead flat. No way.
Yeah, likewise, we actually had a long talk about whether the canvas taped to the dome could have possibly held, like the way in which he had like made a makeshift door, repaired the makeshift door, whether that could possibly have held. And there's no way, you know, same thing. And we had another discussion about the power that he used to heat the buggy in order to drive from here to there. And there we had more trouble. It was like, maybe that's real, you know. It was like, okay, maybe that's right, you know. So there were certain things and I also read the book The Martian as well, and I really enjoyed the book, by the way. The book is a little better, in my opinion, than the movie. There's still a few things that are a little bit like stretching of what science can do, but still, that's part of what science fiction or what stories are about. So, if you're reading it to enjoy it or watching it to enjoy it versus wanting something with real science, like real science, it's a tough call as to which is better. Back to you.
KC2RFN, I remember exactly him talking about what the pressure would be on that makeshift seal in the busted open dome. And again, that was, you're right, another no way. But he actually was calculating numbers and was coming out with, like, you know, a ton per square foot or some crazy number. So every time I watch that scene, I always think about how Dick just blew that out of the water with math on top of it. Back to that.
Yeah, one of the things he would stress is that, as you know, from an engineering point of view, it would be important to know not just whether something would work, but like a ballpark of what you'd expect would be something that you know, he sort of like stressed as something important to know. And I used this skill when I was actually as an engineer, where I had a roommate state some like, you know, numbers he was quoting, and it was like way out of the water. It was like no way. It's like, you know, I'd have to ask him whether how did you survive the measurement type of thing. Like more than that, how did the Earth survive the measurement type of answer. Anyway, the point being is, he would stress the idea of actually knowing whether it was possible, as well as try to calculate ballpark as well. KB2IQN, back to net.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Alan, once again. Unfortunately, drama and science don't go together too well. I mean, Alan, I'm sure you cringe to this day when you see people being resuscitated in television or movies without them removing their shirts on.
A rolled car always explodes. That's another one we used to talk about. There's a common list.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of tropes in film and drama in general that defy the laws of physics, but writers and directors don't really care. If it wows them in the seats, that's what they're there for.
Still played a little fast and loose.
Okay, I think I doubled with you, Alan, unfortunately.
What I was saying is that my father is also a physician, and he had taught me suspension of disbelief, which allowed me to enjoy those medical scenes in movies and television. And I was saying, if you remember the series ER, which I think was in the 90s, that got a lot better, but yeah, I was still playing fast and loose with reality.
Yeah, I was never a big fan of shows with medical themes. I still remember being very annoyed doing biology in college, the inevitable dissection of something or other. Everyone had watched MASH, so they thought that they had to put witty quips in the surgical suite. So I tried to stay away from most medical dramas beyond a certain point.
I think MASH inspired a lot of people to at least look into going into medicine. But, of course, it's nothing like that in reality, and it shouldn't be.
No, medicine should not be funny.
Nope. All right, I'm going to hang it up. The time does fly, but I was glad to be a part of this. It's important. Chris and your mom, I hope I send my condolences to you, and I hope you're getting through the period as best you can. It's KC2RFN.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you for participating, and I hope to hear from you again. Don't be a stranger.
Always a pleasure, Roy. Good night.
7-3, Alan. Thank you.
WB2GXM.
Yes, Rich.
Now I'm curious to know what Dick thought of 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Any comments, Chris?
I'm thinking. I know we talked about it occasionally, but that was, obviously very fictitious in some ways, where the monolith was something supernatural. It defied the laws of physics. It redefined laws of physics. So with that movie, my father would talk about more about the space, like the way space motion was, or the fact that you actually really had to rotate the craft in order to get it into the space station. Like, that seemed real, like the docking sequence. We talked about that. But in terms of, like, the majority of what the movie was really about concerning the monolith, or the fact that the monolith had something to do with the evolution of man, no, we didn't really discuss it much, because it wasn't worthwhile discussion, really, compared to, we would sort of touch base on, where reality broke, and that's where the discussion stopped. KB2IQN.
I'm just curious, because Kubrick took great pains to make the science palatable for a man of Dick's caliber. So, thanks, Chris. WB2GXM.
Well, Rich, you have to keep in mind that it was an interesting combination of things. There was the practical, reasonable science fiction of the future of space travel. They got the fake gravity from the centripetal forces, and they had the video telephone, and then they had the fantastic about the obelisk and aliens and other such. So I think he tried to keep the legitimate science correct, and the fanciful stuff that no one even quite understood what the hell was going on at the time, vague and dubious.
I don't think there were any aliens in that film. I think the alien at the end was another modified or evolved human.
Yeah, I don't think they had aliens, but I think the concept was that the obelisk was left by aliens.
I don't actually know. Okay.
I don't know. The movie was incredible.